It now gives me great pleasure to introduce our speaker for tonight, Marcus from Santa Maria.
My name is Marcus, I'm an alcoholic. All right, Billy's phone's taped on there, so don't knock it off.
Okay.
Hi, I'm again Marcus, alcoholic, and Marcus. Grateful to be here. Thank you for asking me to do this, Karen. I was terrified, but that's okay. I'll be all right. I'm going to do it. My sober date is February 7th, 2013. My home group is a men's stag Thursday night. In Santa Maria, and you guys are all welcome, men. I want to thank all my friends from Santa Maria that were here, and that's so cool. I appreciate all you guys coming out. Nicole, thank you for coming with me. That's really cool of you. I hope you hear something that makes you still think I'm cool, but maybe we'll see how it goes, I guess. So here we go. Like I said, I heard it read. What it was like, what it's like, you know, what it was like, what it's like today, what happened, what it's like, wait, what happened? What it's like today, that's me. So what it was like, I'm going to start from when I was a kid. My first experience with alcohol definitely was my mother. She drank. I saw what alcohol does to, you know, people, and it didn't look attractive at all. It didn't have any, there was no appeal in alcohol, for sure. I watched her, you know, go from a good-hearted person in the daytime to just a drunk, raging psychopath at nighttime. And I saw how it affected my dad, and it definitely affected us, you know, me as well. You know, there was times where I was the parent, you know, and I would take care of mom. At like 8 or 9 years old, I was taking mom around. It's okay, you know, and shuffling her around. You know, she'd come to my things at school and she'd wear no shoes. She was just a straight hippie and drunk and just, it was some crazy stuff, man, to have a mom like that. But, because none of my friends seemed to have moms like that. A couple, but mostly none. And I, you know, I don't know what that did to my dad, but my dad was always there for me. When I was a young kid, he would take me camping every weekend. He'd take me fishing, he'd take me camping, he'd take me to the movies. I mean, in attention, I was spoiled, you know. We didn't have a lot of money back then at all, but in attention, I'll never be, you know, I'm so grateful to that, getting to escape that little town in Los Alamos. You know, and that time went on, and, you know, my mom's life was tough. And I remember thinking like this. I remember talking to a friend, and I was like, you know what, I'm never going to be an alcoholic. I'm never going to drink. Ever, bro, ever. And I picked up the weed, man. Like, that was my thing. Like, I love this. This is so different from what she does, because she's a monster, and we're chilling. And that was cool for a while. It helped me cope with life. It helped me cope with school. It made me not care as much about what you thought of me. Because I realized, you know, as I've been sober, that I really did care what you think about me. But I was so scared of you at the same time. I didn't know how to interact with people very well. And weed was just like the answer to that problem, because then I just hung out with other dudes and smoked weed, and that was it. After a while, my mom, she got sober, and I was 14 years old, and she went to a rehab, and her life changed. You know, I watched. Another thing is, I do get emotional a little bit. I'm going to try not to that much, but it's okay. It does happen because it's gratitude today. Today, I'm grateful. I don't cry for myself like I used to when I was a kid. Like, no, I'm mourning. No, today, it's because of gratitude. But I watched my mom change her life from a barefoot, she just had nothing going for her, to somebody that started the Humane Society in Santa Maria. She was one of the people that helped start that. And this transition happened. She went to a rehab, got out, and she was a different person. I couldn't believe what had happened. And I thought, are you going to make me quit smoking pot? You know, because me and her smoked a lot of weed together. She was always cool with that. And she said, no, you're fine. Don't worry about that. You know, and so that was good for a little while until she realized, I'm not letting this guy smoke weed forever. This is ridiculous. So I was like 16, and they came to me and they go, "You're quitting." And I was like, "I can't," you know, and I did, and I gave it up. I went about 6 months, no nothing. I quit. My life had changed a little bit. Things were different. And that one thing I thought I'd never do, I'd never thought I'd drink, because I think drinking's stupid. I hate the way they act, and I don't like it. And you're out of control. And I tried it, and I liked it, you know. And I liked it. It wasn't going to be like it was for her, because I'm different. So, thank God. I'm not going to be like that. And it went good for a long time. Drinking was good for a while there. You know, and when I was 18, I got a DUI, you know, and I crashed my car, and I was still in high school, and I remember my drinking really picked up there, too. Right before that DUI, I remember drinking all summer long, and then when school started again, we only drank on the weekends, and then, so it seemed so manageable, like, this is probably this is gonna be okay, and then I got that DUI, and I felt like maybe I got a problem, but not enough to quit drinking, I don't think, so that was not a thing. I didn't quit drinking. I kept going. It got stronger, got more. I came home drunk once, and you know, they didn't like that, because she's an AA, and that was not cool of me to do that, right? And I come home drunk at 9 p.m. Think it's late, but it's not late. And I walk in the door drunk, and I think I'm gonna just cruise to my room, and there they are, just like, "What are you doing?" And right, the freak out happens, and I remember I cussed my dad out, and I said, "Come on, blah blah blah," and I went outside, and he came out there, and instead of beating me up like he had every right to do, by the way, because I called him on, like, "Let's go, man," and all that crap. Instead of doing that, he goes, "Calm down, dude, calm down. It's going to be okay. You just got to calm down and get through this." And I was like, "Oh, okay." So I go to my room. I wake up in the morning, and I think, was that a dream? Because that'd be cool if that was a dream. And I walked out, and there's my bags all packed by the door. I knew right away, it's not a dream. I did it last night. And they kicked me out right then. You know, I was 20 years old. I had a job at, like, Miller's Outpost. But no. I had no brains in my head. Like, I was still just, duh, you know, like a little kid still, kind of. Because alcohol stunted my thing, you know, so did weed since I was like 11. So, you know, my maturity was so, so low. I didn't know how I'd live. And I didn't think about, back then it didn't seem like being on the street was a thing, you know. And so I thought, you know, shit, maybe, can I join the military? You know? And they said, "Yeah, you can join the military." And 8 months later, I went to boot camp and joined the Navy. I liked it. That was cool. Unfortunately, they really drink in the Navy. You know, like, you're going from drinking with your friends to, like, these guys professionally drink, you know. And I do remember AA meetings over the sound system. They were having them all the way back in 1992 in the Navy. So I knew they had them. I didn't want any part of that at all. But, yeah, I got in the Navy, and then I stayed. And, you know, I got married. I took a hostage. She was my girlfriend in high school. And she, you know, there was nothing wrong with her. She didn't have any drinking problems. She was a go-getter. She was, I know, I loved her so much, but I loved alcohol more, you know. And, like, so I'd always be coming up with ways to be drinking and not piss her off, you know. But that's, like, almost impossible, because I really want to drink more than I care about pissing you off. And you know, and more so than that, I lost my interest in being married to her, you know. Well, she should have lost her interest in my dumbass, but she didn't. And so the first chance I got, I was like, out. And so we got divorced, you know, and that's when my drinking just went boom, because I was free now. I was free from trying to restrict it and trying to walk the line and be a normal person. And I was 26 then, 25. And then I moved back to Santa Maria. I was in the Bay Area at that time. Moved back to Santa Maria. And man, I just fell in with these guys that loved to party, and, you know, and that's what we all did. It was a good time, you know, but my drinking just got worse, and I picked up another DUI at some point. And then 7 months later, I got another DUI. And I was like, uh-oh, you know, I'm in my parents. I was living at their house at this point right now. And they go, you're going to AA. That's it. You're going to get sober. And so I went to some meetings. I remember the Lion's Den in Orchid. I went to these meetings and I just thought it was the dumbest thing I'd ever seen in my life. You know what I mean? They're all holding my hands. These dudes want to hug me, by the way. They want to give me a hug. And we don't hug. People don't hug right, you know? So I didn't understand any of that. And I didn't understand the stories because I wasn't open to my mind at all. You know, my mind was like, clap, shut. I was sure I knew because I'd been getting along this far. I was sure that I knew the right way to live. I just had a bunch of bad, unfortunate events with DUIs. You know, that's not that big of a deal, right? And I had these events or whatever, and I went to AA for 3 months. I went for 3 months, and the whole time I just sat there on my hands going, this is so dumb. And, you know, at the end we hug, and I hated it. But, you know, I eventually was able to just say, I'm done, man. I'm done, and I went back to drinking again. You know, I went back to drinking, and I was, you know. But something happened in there. I don't know what it was. I know I met a few people. I met an old-timer named Hank Hoffmeyer. I met a couple other people in there that were important because they kept coming to my house and knocking on my door and saying, let's go to a meeting. And I was like, I don't want to go to that meeting. I hate meetings. I did meet those guys. And later in life, I remember those guys today. And I think how cool that was of them to just to come to some 26-year-old dummy's house to try to help him out to go to a meeting. But, you know, I wasn't seeing it that way then. I'm going to take a break. I wear these glasses. I have a brain tumor behind my left eye, and the lights burn my eyes. So that's why I don't do it because I'm cool or something like that. It gets really bad. I start getting pain. So that's where that is. But, my drinking escalated, and it got really bad. Drugs came into effect. And 2 years later, you know, 2 years later, I remember we were leaving Pismo Beach, me and my best friend then. And we'd been drinking all day, and we'd been partying all day. And we got in a fight with a bunch of guys out there, and a bunch of guys. It was just mayhem. It was something that I enjoyed that in those days. I enjoyed that feeling of, I don't know what that feeling is. It's the feeling that I have some power. Because I had no power in life, you know what I mean? All this drinking and all this, I'm always powerless. Every relationship I'm in, I'm powerless because I ruin the power. I never can keep it because I give it away so readily. And I have to apologize so quickly to people. So I'm always powerless. So maybe hurting somebody else makes me feel good about myself. And that maybe that is why I was so sick like that. I don't know. But on the way home, that same person, I remember he looked at me. We had gotten a fight. And him and I fought, like, one-on-one. And we're best friends, and best friends don't do that, you know? And I just remember him looking at me. He was in the car, and he looked at me, and he goes, Marcus, I am so, so sorry, dude. I will never do that again. I can't believe I did that. I can't believe that happened. And it was the first time in my life. I thought about coming back to AA before. But it was the first time in my life I saw a mirror flipped up in front of my face of exactly what I sound like and what I say to people. And what I tell people when I want them to understand and give me a pass. Because he was trying to get me to give him a pass. And I do this all the time. This is my life. I'm just seeing somebody else do it right now. And I swear to God, you guys, I poured out my beers that day. And I called my mom. By the way, she had written me off. That tough love thing, that was real with my mom. She was like, they like kicked me out on Easter, I think. And then said, don't ever come back here, you know, until you get sober. And so that happens, and I call my mom, and I say, Mom, I don't know what to do. I need to quit drinking because I'd seen it. It was like this moment of clarity while drunk, by the way, while buzzing. I saw what I am. And I called her and I said, hey, you know, I think I need to go to AA. And she told me what to do. She said, go to Sunday meeting at the Pyramid Group in Orchid, because it was Saturday night. And I went to that meeting and I missed it. They were gone. There was no one there. I'd missed it by 1 hour. I called her. I go, uh-oh. You know, that's looking good. I don't know what I'm going to do now. I'm probably, you know, I'm thinking I'm going to end up drinking again, because it's a whole day of not drinking. And I end up going to the, she tells me, go to the 1600 Club. He might be there. Because I had met this man that first time when I was 26. His name was Hank, and I said that before, but that dude liked me. There was something about him. He liked me. I don't know what it was. I was a drunk and, I wasn't a good person then, but he gave me love in a way that I never felt it before. So I remembered him, and I go, I need Hank, Mom, I went to that meeting at the 7 o'clock speaker meeting, and he was there. I swear to God, it was like a miracle or whatever. And he just held me, and he told me, it's going to be okay. And I said, I need to quit drinking, man. And I was bawling. I need to quit drinking. And he goes, it's going to be okay. And I sat through my first meeting that I cared about, that I wanted to be at. And after that meeting, I was like, Hank, I don't know what I'm supposed to do now, but what am I supposed to do now? Because where do I go? And he looked over at a guy, and he goes, hey, Lee, come here. Take this guy to the 8:30 meeting, right? And Lee was with his family, I'm pretty sure, and Lee's like, oh, okay. And he takes me, I follow him in my car, full of beer cans, but I follow him in my car, and we go over to this Alano Club, and I make it to another meeting, and I now got sober that night. That day was, that was a miracle day for me, That was the day that I look at it like this, and always have. There's a window. And I've always seen this window. And when I'm drunk and when things go bad, and I look through that window, and I think I should go through it, but I don't. This day I did. This day I went through the window. And I went through and I saw, it's like crazy because I'd seen that window almost hundreds of times, I think. But this time I went through it. And anyways, my life obviously changed a lot. I it was weird at first, the first few months. I came in there late. I left early. For about 9 months I did that. And I stayed sober somehow. I don't know how. But I didn't want to be... I didn't know how to interact still. And, I was listening to the stories. I was happy to be here, but I didn't know how to be part of you. And the weirdest thing happened is I'm at work one day, and my eye turns in 15 degrees. And suddenly I can't see, and I go to the hospital and the doctors, and I'm sober and all this stuff's happening. Then they find out I have a brain tumor in my head. And I've got like 9 months, And I could have never handled that drinking. What would I have done if I was drinking, So I do the doctor stuff and all this, and I come back with an eye patch to AA one day, and somebody goes, hey, what happened to you? And I was like, told my story, and everybody circled around me. And like, gave me love. Are you okay? Oh, that's terrible. Oh man. And just paid attention to me. And it made me want to come to the meetings earlier and stay a little later, because I knew that these people cared about me, which, when I first got here too, it was a weird feeling to give anybody a hug or to tell anybody. I remember this when somebody goes, good job, Marcus. And I was like, I don't know how to take a compliment. I don't understand. A compliment to me is so foreign because nobody, when I was drinking, went, good job, Marcus. They always were like, nobody said that. And I never told you good job because I might give you a good feeling, and I'm not giving you good feelings. I want the good, It's all this ego, pride thing. Anyways, I did start coming around more, and then I was struggling with some of the stuff, and I'd gotten a sponsor at this point, and he's an amazing dude. I love that guy. To this day, he's still my sponsor, even through my relapse I did have, but he's still my sponsor, and I love that guy so much. And I came to meetings, and I remember the Monday night group with Lisa. And I remember being in the room going, I don't understand God, and I don't think I'm ever going to understand this God thing, and I don't think I care, and I don't want to, and I don't understand. And somebody said this, they go, just believe that somebody else believes, And I go, that's dumb. I don't get that either. But I had no better options. I didn't know what to do. And I knew Lisa, and I knew she believed, like all the way believed, and I was like, I believe she believes. I believe that she believes in a higher power. And it's like open the door, man, to like possibilities. Just the idea that I can believe that you believe. I don't understand it still to this day. You know, I think I was born like a bucker. You know what I mean? Like if something is presented to me and it's good, I don't need that shit. Right? Or if it's bad, I'm like, nah. You know, it seemed like as a kid, when things came my way, I always bucked the system. And it seems like that sometimes, even with a higher power today in recovery, I catch myself bucking the system in AA. What's that dumb? So I don't, you know, and to be part of the group and to be fully in it means more to me today, right now, on this date, than anything. Because I wouldn't even say the Lord's Prayer in meetings. I would, you know, I'm not going to do that because I am bucking the system because Marcus thinks differently. And you know, today, I don't want to buck anymore. I want to be part of. I want to be, like they say, the middle of the herd, you know. I want to be more in the middle of the herd. And sometimes I got to sacrifice these things that go off in my head. I heard a dude say it the other day, Randy. He said, you know, I never had a problem with God. I had a problem with drinking. I had a problem with drugging. I had a problem with abusing people and being a cheater. I had a problem with all that, but I didn't have a problem with God. When he said that, it took from that I find the problem. You know, I'll find a problem with God when all these other bad things could be happening, but I'll be like, oh no, but God, that's not, you know, and I'll write it all off in my own mind. And today that's not what I don't need that anymore. Even if I don't understand what the higher power is and I don't understand it, I still don't need to fight it, you know? And so being part of the group and the herd is just kind of important to me today. And my life is so much better for it, you know? In that first recovery, I also got into service work and did some district stuff. That was a lot of fun. Went to PRASA. I heard you guys talk about that. That's really cool, man. Me and you went to PRASA, Felina. Yeah, me and Lisa went to PRASA. So much fun. And I didn't know it, but you could have fun and be sober because it seemed like when I was drinking, when I quit drinking, fun's over, you know. But it was worth it to me because I'm so tired of this life I live that I don't need fun. I just need to stop being like this. This has got to end. But it turns out that's not true. And we have more fun today than I ever thought I could before because I'm here for it. You know, I'm conscious and part of it all. So, yeah, man. Life got good. Money's in the honey, as they say. No, I got good jobs. I work for myself. I build fences and patios and things for people. But you know, I got married. We had kids. I was still doing service. And my career started taking off. And things got good. I bought a house. Everything got really good. And I realized I don't need AA quite as much as I used to need it, you know? I did need it before, but now I got my kids. That's number one, right? Kids got to be number one. Wife's got to be up there number two. AA is somewhere right here down on the list, right? And eventually, I relapsed, you know? I prioritized all the wrong things. Because without this one thing, I don't have any of these things, it turns out. Because I lost every one of those things. So that's okay, but you know, that is what I did, you know, and I found a way to relapse and still come to meetings, which is disgusting when I think about it. I relapsed on pain pills, and that seems different. I should be able to go to meetings still. And I got right up here, and I took a 10-year cake. Yeah, and I know I was relapsed. Like there's taking a pain pill because you need a pain pill, and there's doing whatever that was I was doing. And that was relapse, for sure, for sure. To thine own self, Marcus, don't lie. So I knew I was real, and it's the most disgusting thing in the world to be up here and taking a cake and thank you, you know, and being lying, and you know, especially after everything in AA we learned to not be that way. You know, I did to relapse, and what I really looked at when I look back at it, I thought it was because I stole some boards from Fence Factory. It's not because of that. Because that is one of the symptoms. That is one thing I did do. I started stealing things while I was sober. That was before I even relapsed. I took my will back is what I did do, though. That is it. That is the whole crux of what I did wrong, is I took my will back. All the things in the fourth step that I talked to my sponsor about, and the agreement I made with my higher power, that today I'm not going to steal, I'm not going to lie, I'm not going to cheat, I'm not going to do these stupid things I always do. If you let me be sober, if you help me to stay sober. That was a trade-off I made with my higher power. And I took it back, you know. I started taking them back and taking them back and taking them back. It wasn't not going to the meetings. That was a symptom of that. Everything was a symptom of taking my will back. Oh, what time do I quit? Okay, cool. You better get, okay. So I got sober again. thank God, right? What was it? So drugs. Got hard into those. And then got busted a few times. Caught a DUI again. That's four. The judge and the probation officer and a police officer. I can't remember. A bunch of them had a group meeting, and they put me in detox. And they saved my life because it could have sent me to jail, which I totally deserve. But they sent me to detox instead and said, one more chance, Marcus. And I found a bottom in there. I found a bottom. I sat down on that bed, and everything, all the lies and all the things that I had, the shields I had put up, because my sponsor would call me, and I would never answer his calls during those 3 years I was relapsed. He wanted nothing more than to just be my friend, but I wouldn't do it. I wouldn't listen to any of you. I didn't want to talk to any of you because you would tell me to get sober, Marcus, and I didn't want to be sober anymore. Because as soon as I drink or do drugs, I love it, by the way. I don't want to come back here. I don't. So it's that first one they say is the real deal, Holyfield, for me. If I drink or do any kind of drugs, I'm gone. So found that bottom in there. Thank you, God, for that. Got into service. I went to like 90 meetings in 90 days, but I did definitely like 200 meetings in 90 days, you know, because that was working. And detox saved my life, man. They saved my life. I never would have gotten there without them. I was also thinking about doing step 9. Whenever I did my steps, when I got to step 4 and I did it with my sponsor, I didn't feel that sense that everybody talks about. But when I did step 9, I started making amends to people. When I started, you know, cleaning up the wreckage, God, my load just lightened, you know. I remember that so vividly, you know. I'm back in recovery, but unfortunately, like, I was in this relationship, and, like, I prioritized that. I was coming to meetings sometimes, but not all the time. I was calling my sponsor sometimes, not all the time. I did it for years, you know. And in the last 2 years, something, you know, changed, and I'm out of that relationship today. But it's not her fault. It was my fault. I was the one choosing what to do or not to do. But today my life is so full because I surround myself with AA people. I go to meetings every day. I am part of a group of people that care about me and love me, you know. And I could just sit at home and click that thing. I'm good at that. I'll just sit and click, click, click that remote. But I get up on my butt today to go be part of, because I find happiness there. Whereas before, I would just stay at home all the time, being sober. But damn, that stuff is boring. And I felt so alone that way. So it's amazing how you could be in recovery, and you could be working it, or you could be kind of working it, or barely working it. And I would say I was barely working it for years, you know. You know, you could be on fire, and then it can fizzle right out. And that's not what I want today, you know. I want to be sober and happy, not just dry, you know. Let's see, 10 minutes, you said? 5 minutes. What time does it end? At 8?
Ish.
Okay. I'm gonna read then. Let's see if I can find my glasses. Oh, yeah, there they are.
Do you want me to take the lights down?
No, you're fine. Lights are good. Thank you. Thank you, though. I appreciate that. So, just going to read page 85. Ready? If we are painstaking about this phase of our development, we will be amazed before we are halfway through. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We will not regret the past nor wish to shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity, and we will know peace. I wanted to know peace so bad when I was drinking. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experience can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook upon life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurities will leave us. We will intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. Are these extravagant promises? They are being fulfilled among us, sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. They will always materialize if you work for them. You know, AA has some of the most beautiful writings, in the world. I'm not a big reader, but I'm going to tell you right now, this stuff makes me cry when I read it, because I realized they wrote that book about Marcus. They wrote that book about me. They wrote it for me so I could understand myself and stop hurting everyone around me. It's funny, what the people that we hurt when we're drinking, which I remember thinking, I'm not even hurting you. So what is the problem? Why does it bother you so much that I drink alcohol or that I like to get drunk sometimes? What's the big deal? The big deal, and now I know because I'm an Al-Anon too, I know that it's painful to watch someone you love destroy their life. Oh, I didn't know that, because I can only see it from my side of the street. I didn't even know you had a side of the street. My mom relapsed. I watched that. Thank God we never relapsed together, because that would have been good and bad, but thank God, I watched her relapse, and it was heartbreaking, man. It was watching her just do all the lies and moves that I did, the same exact lies and moves, thank God she got back here just like I did, it's amazing, man. I'm going to end with this. There's a story, and probably a lot of you have heard it, but it's one of my favorite stories I've ever heard. It's person said it from the podium, 20 years ago or something. And it goes like this. A man dies and he goes to heaven. And he gets up to heaven and he sees St. Peter and he says, St. Peter says, hey, okay, good. And we're glad you're here. La, la. And he goes, am I going to heaven or hell? And he goes, well, let's find out. So the first thing they do is they go to this room and they open up the door and he looks inside and he sees all this food and all these people, and it's full of like delicious food and beautiful things and the lighting and everything, but he's looking in there and he sees the people, and they all got these giant spoons, right? They all got these giant spoons and they're all trying to get the food in their mouth. The closer he looks, he realizes they're all skinny and emaciated, and he sees that they're all dying and they're all in there and it's terrible and they can't feed themselves. And he's like, well, I don't want this room, man. And he says, okay, fine. And he walks him out of that room and he goes into another room. And he opens up that door and it's the exact same room, almost the exact same people. They're all holding those damn spoons still. But this time it's different, because this time they're all heavy. They're all laughing. They're all joyous and they're all free. And it's because they're feeding each other from across the table with that spoon. And they're all feeding each other. That's us. That's AA. We feed each other. We don't just selfishly take, we give. I learned that here, man. That's all I got.
Okay. Let's have another round of applause for our speakers.